And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 242. It's Bloom Board Tuesday, folks. Going to be a fun one here, talking batting average and home run risers and fallers for the 2025 season, the early 2025 season, and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
We're doing good, man. Having a little bit of an internal debate the last couple of days, you know, since I won the first beer bet of 2025 over you last week, just debating how to cash that one in Arizona. I've got some time, got about 6 months to go, but just wondering what I'm going to order, where I'm going to order on your tab for Shane Smith out pitching whoever you had for the White Sox, Burke.
Put some respect on his name. Yes.
Last week. So yes, 1-0 on the beer bet list for 2025. It feels good, man. It feels really good.
I bet it does. I bet it feels real good. I'm going to look up just to see how close these two were. So last seven games on the player rater, Shane Smith was 29th. Burke's not on that.
It's a good stream. It's a good stream. So for those who didn't listen, this was, I don't know how we got into this, but both had two steps for the White Sox the same week. And so we beer bet who would have the better two step for 1 week. My God, they both had sub two ERAs. You might have to scroll a few more pages for yours.
Yeah, I have scrolled a few pages and I'm still not finding them. So that can't be possibly right. Wow. This is broken. Okay, fine. Your guy got 29th overall.
Excuses, dude.
Yeah, he had a... Oh, wow. He won 60th on the player rater.
There we go.
10 and a third innings with a 1.74 ERA, a 1.55 whip, and only four strikeouts.
Right, exactly. So, feels good. Feels too good to get one on my ledger. I'll probably have another one pretty soon with Robbie Ray pitching more innings than Nestor Cortez. Feeling pretty good about that one too. So
yeah, I bet you are.
Yeah, we'll see.
I bet you are. Yeah, if we're gonna play that game right now, let's pull up some shortstops real quick and talk about. Let's see if I can find anybody on this list. Bo Bichette's 22nd right now. Mason Wynn's 29th, and Mason Milian missed some time. And you were already kind of counting that one, I believe.
That one yet. Bo Bichette just had his game of the season tonight.
So yeah, I was told he's back. Yeah. We've got
Rico blasting the anti Bichette crowd on Twitter. We are back. It's feeling good.
It's okay. It's feeling. Enjoy it because Mason Wynn is getting healthy and gonna have some fun out there, folks. So I'll get at least one back.
It is funny how much on an island I still am about Mason Wynn. Every time he does something, he'll like get a hit. The Discord just goes crazy for some Mason Wynn. I gotta go in there and tell him just to, you know, that's cute, guys. That's chill out.
Yeah, but the chill out only works for so long. So yes. All right, let's move on to some news here as Ryan has fun gloating about some nonsense along the way here. Let's kick it off. Roki Sasaki, the big time signing from Japan for the Los Angeles Dodgers this year, a pitcher that everyone was excited about because of the skill sets he showcased in Japan. A guy that we found out after he signed was recommended to get Tommy John surgery and said, nope, because I want to go make money in America. A guy that has struggled so far to start the season with velocity dipping down. Roki Sasaki hits the IL with shoulder impingement. That's what they're going to call it for now, Ryan. Obviously, he'll probably get in line behind Snell and Glass now at the good doctor's office to go see what's going on over there. It's located. Ben Tidd and I determined it's probably located next to the bullpen in Chavez Ravine. That's where his office is.
Well, Ola Trash is the team physician.
That's why we started speculating where he's located. Gotcha. With the team, and the bullpen made the most sense where most injuries take place. It's either that or Freddie Freeman's shower. But where are we looking at? What's your thoughts on this Roki Sasaki deal? Because it was still very vague with what's actually going on.
Right. And I still don't even know. Like, it is somewhat oddly timed with Clayton Kershaw coming back this weekend. Like, you never know. You never know with the Dodgers what kind of shenanigans are going on there. But certainly not. I mean, no matter what, even if Sasaki's really hurt, if he's not, if he's hurt bad, we just don't know. But, like, what I do know is the skills look – I mean, they were really bad for Sasaki. It was basically as many walks as strikeouts. It was an 8% swinging strike. The velocity was not what we thought it would be, at least in recent starts. So I always think back to, remember we had Tom Mulhall on over the winter talking about the overseas prospects that he writes up in the Forecaster every year. And he kind of had a take saying he would for 2025 take Sugano over Sasaki. And
shocked us in the moment.
Whoa. Yeah. And I mean, Sugano's been better lately, but hasn't been, you know, lighting the world on fire or anything. But that was quite the interesting take from Tom. And so far it's looking okay. So I don't know. We had a question in the Discord earlier, is Sasaki a drop? Probably even in 12s, I think I would move on. We just haven't seen anything from any reason to kind of hold Sasaki at this point. And then, like I said, Kershaw is kind of, I think it's kind of a one and one replacement. I mean, folks want Ben Kasperius to go back in the rotation, but I don't think it will. I don't think there's room until someone else gets hurt. So.
Patience. It's coming.
Yeah.
It'll arrive. Yes.
I mean, dude, they've got Glass now. Right now on the IL, they've got Glass now, Snell, Sasaki, Kershaw, but Kershaw coming back. Remember Emmett Sheehan? Remember Gavin Stone? Like, dude, they have a full rotation on the IL right now.
A lot of money on the IL, too. They got that money in like 2040 on the IL. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, I want Ben Kasperius to be a thing so bad. It's really frustrating because I picked him up and I'm still holding him because I just don't trust this rotation. Landon Knack got knocked around. I was going to make a bad joke, but I stopped against the A's on Tuesday night. So how long does he stick in the rotation? There's a lot of moving pieces there. And, you know, Kershaw isn't fully stretched out. So for all we know, Kasperius could either open for Kershaw or come in after Kershaw and do something. So I still think there's a world where we see Kasperius be, worth an option sooner than later.
Agreed. And most recent, well, I guess not his most recent appearance, but on May 5th, Kasperius at the Marlins threw 70 pitches. So like the Dodgers are stretching Kasperius out. My hunch is they will need him in the rotation and sooner rather than later.
Skill set is very, very good. So yeah, Snell. And so you mentioned Kershaw back this weekend. Snell is, now it was supposed to get his
dying basically,
but supposed to meet with the doc on Monday, got moved to Tuesday. We still haven't heard the results of that just yet, but he got shut down. I'm waiting for the season ending information to come throwing out there. Glass now went back and saw him. He's supposed to regain his he might get in the rehab outings here next week. We'll see on that, but yeah, lots of moving parts in LA and not all good ones. A little bit of good news here. The Chicago Cubs, bad news part, Ian Happ to the IL with an oblique injury, supposedly grade one, nothing too crazy. The weird move here, they have a bunch of talented offense outfielders in the minors, but they called up their stud catching prospect, fourth overall team prospect, and Moises Ballesteros, Ryan. He DH'd on Tuesday night, hitting seventh for the team. He had four homers and three steals. At Triple A, you're hitting like 380, so or 360. So where are you at on this Ballesteros thing? We kind of talked about it before the show, but people are very excited, and I want to tell them to temper things.
I think so, too. This guy is an absolute unit, by the way. Like,
dude.
A complete tank.
Rowdy Tellez's illegitimate child. Like,
dude, it's impressive.
If Vogelbach and Tellez could have had a kid, this is him.
It's impressive for a 21-year-old. Dude is a unit. So we'll move on from that one. Fantasy wise, because obviously they've got Carson Kelly and Miguel Amaya kind of tag teaming catcher, and so Ballesteros DH tonight. I just don't know if the playing time is going to be there for Ballesteros, and even still, like, I don't even know. I mean, he's 21. Like, the power, at least this year, like you said, four homers in 150 plate appearances. It's like a 5% barrel rate. So yeah, like the play skills are really good. Tons of contact against AAA pitching, but I don't know. Like, I'd rather have Edgar Caro, or even still rather have Agustin Ramirez over Moises Ballesteros. There's just playing time questions. I don't think this guy's going to be their full-time DH moving forward. I feel like they want to move some pieces around and cycle people through that spot. So I'm going to be very tepid on Ballesteros unless he you know, plays every day and has a good week, but then the fat price is going to be through the roof. So I'm probably out anyway.
Yeah, we'll have to kind of wait and see. I'm with you. I'm likely out as well, but they had Michael Bush taking grounders at third before the game, so maybe Ballesteros can move to first, which is weird because Matt Shaw is actually crushing it at AAA right now, so you have that going for you. A lot of moving parts in Chicago, and it just seems like I don't think Ballesteros is here for long. So we'll see. He could hit his way into it, and time will tell on that one. All right, Jordan Lawler also got promoted by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Did not play on Monday. Started at shortstop on Tuesday through an error right before we started to talk about him live in the game. The weird part about this, Ryan, is even on Sunday when the talk of him getting called up, the teams flat out said, like, okay, yeah, he's getting called up, but we're only going to play him like four times a week as like basically a utility fill-in. And if that's the case, that doesn't work for me.
Right. Agreed. If Jordan Lawler is playing four times a week, that's not great. I still get why the Diamondbacks brought him up. Jordan Lawler has nothing left to prove in the minors. I mean, he's been up in the majors a couple times. Or no, he's been up once. Sorry, it was 2023. He was out last season. But he's already, like, it makes sense, I think, for the Diamondbacks to have Lawler there. And as we all know, if someone can play three different positions, like the Diamondbacks are planning to use Jordan Lawler, at some point, a spot will open up for Jordan Lawler. And I feel like this is the ultimate, like, guy is an elite prospect. He's already come up to the majors. He's already failed once. The numbers in the minors are like through the roof. He's running. Like I think Jordan Lawler, I am more interested in Lawler. I don't know if this is even useful, but much more interested in Lawler than Ballesteros, even if he's playing four times a week right now. Because I think that four times a week, the Diamondbacks want him to play. I think that at some point an injury is going to happen and we're going to see a full-time Jordan Lawler. There are just so many different paths to regular playing time for him. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see the Diamondbacks just sending him back down either. Because Jordan Lawler does not need to be in the minors anymore.
No, I agree. He shouldn't be in the minors. He feels like he's going to take like a Josh Smith role. Like where he does,
and Josh Smith, like over a season, will even though he has a bad back right now or whatever, but like he will get a ton of plate appearances.
15s, go get them. 12s, it's trickier. So all I'm saying, it's very tricky in 12s. True. See how the week goes, but I agree the skill set is very good. Still have to see if he can do it really in his first full run, as the last run didn't last that long. A couple more bits of news here. Corey Seager, shocker. Stop if you heard this one before. To the IL with another soft tissue injury, this time another hamstring injury for Corey Seager. Josh Smith, if his back got healthy, would play shortstop, but right now it's Ezekiel Duran. They're saying it's a minor issue. We'll see. But this is just rinse and repeat every season of why I don't draft Corey Seager.
And I nod my head in agreement with you pretty much every draft season. Pretty much just about Corey Seager. We fight about other guys.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I wish it was Josh Smith's season, like for real, but he's missed the first two games of this week with a back. Duran's actually, he could be useful every day playing time, but that's more of a 15-team play for me too.
Yes, Hunter, he's got to be more of a 15 if he plays regularly, but yes, he could come into play. Hopefully it's not a major deal for Smith. I want to get your thoughts on Hayden Wesneski. You talked to Ben about it on Monday, but I know you were big. He was one of your later round targets, and rightfully so. Like, I totally agreed with all of it. Goes on the IL with right elbow inflammation. It's swelling pretty good. So they shut him down because you can't really take a good MRI with swelling everywhere. Doesn't feel great. Was dropped a lot of places. What are your thoughts on this Wesneski deal?
Yeah, Wesneski was, and I'm a big Wesneski guy. One of my most rostered guys in draft season. He was on plenty of my drop lists just because I have other injuries. We don't know how long Wesneski will be out. And even if it's 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks, say it's something like that, something just shortly beyond the minimum. You just don't know what you're going to get from a post-injury Wesneski, who, again, I like the skills, but like if I have to rank stashing injured guys on a lot of my teams, Wesneski was not top two or even top three on a lot of them. So just by default, he was dropped because I have to try and field a team and have some depth on reserves.
Yep. Totally agree with you on that. And that'll wrap us up for the news. There's other little minor nuggets here and there, but we will move along for the Bloom Board. But first, I want to answer Michael C's question here in the chat. Bubba, does Koss Wally Pip Fitzgerald? Ooh. I do not think so. But first off, see, Ryan, when I mentioned this guy, when Fitzgerald got hurt, you're like, who?
Yeah, I thought you were talking Tristan Koss's. But no, it's Christian Koss. Tristan Koss.
He had a grand slam, his first career home run on Tuesday. So he's alive, doing his thing. I think it's still Fitzgerald's job, and we're all just going to sit back and watch him strike out at 32% of the time, but, you know, hit for power and speed like he was doing before he got hurt. So got that going for you.
Hey, congratulations to Nick Kurtz. Just hit his first major league home run.
Finally it happened for everybody's bench. Awesome. All right. Good call on that one. What are we doing blue board time before I really dig a massive hole here?
Keep digging, Bubba. All right, tonight's balloon board is surface stat related. We're going to go a little bit different direction. A lot of times on these balloon boards, we'll show skills. Like the last two Tuesdays, we've kind of looked at skills, gainers, and faders. This time, we're going to look at surface stats, and then we'll actually just talk about some of the skills and what we see with some of these guys. But basically looking at, this is pretty simple, the biggest gainers and faders. We've got two boards up here, green for the gainers, or red for the faders, or fallers, whatever you want to say. In batting average and home runs, 2025 versus 2024. And so it's very simple. We've just got the batting average and the home run total for each player for this season and last year. The home runs are per 600 plate appearances. So just FYI on that. I'm just kind of scaling those out. Like, no, Jorge Polanco does not have 53 home runs this year, but Jorge Polanco is on a, crazy enough, 53 home run pace if he were to reach 600 plate appearances. So I'll let you drive as usual. We'll just kind of spitball and talk about some of these guys who we think will stick, won't stick, buy high, sell high, buy low, sell low. I think those are the four options, and we'll go from there. But pretty simple board. We'll talk about the skills and what we think of these guys throughout the show.
Yep, let's kick it off with Jorge Polanco, because this is a one I was actually looking at last night for something else. So to see him at the top of the list does kind of justify some more of my thoughts. Last year hit 213, on pace for 327, 20 home runs last year, on pace for 53. He's always hurt. One thing to keep in mind, he had that like week and a half stretch where he just hit everything out of the ballpark. But what I wanted to bring up, that seeing him on this board, like the last 10 games or so, it's been bleak. It's been one home run. He's hitting probably closer to 220, 230 over that stretch. So the regression monster is slowly coming into play with Jorge Polanco. What are your thoughts on this projected 327, I guess 53 on pace number?
It's tough because, like, just looking at the year-to-date skills, this is one of the tougher, like, profiles that I have a problem with. Is like, the skills totally support what Jorge Polanco is doing. One of the biggest, like, he's doubled his barrel rate from last year to this year, from 8 to 16%. And he's basically cut his strikeout rate down a third, from 30% last year, which is pretty bad, to 11% this season. 11% strikeout rate is, like, elite, and you're doing that while doubling your barrel rate. So there's something very good happening with Jorge Polanco under the hood. No, he's not going to keep this pace, of course, but I think while Jorge Polanco is healthy, and that's the ultimate kind of cloud over this profile, we don't know. I think we do know he's going to get hurt. We just don't know when. But I think while Jorge Polanco is healthy, I think he can maintain over like a full season, like a 30 home run pace with a decent batting average. I think that's super useful. So I don't think you're selling. I think you're just riding this as long as you can and hoping Jorge Polanco can stay healthy for most of the season.
Yeah. When you look at some of those metrics you mentioned, the barrel rate, hard hit rate's crazy. X batting average actually thinks he's underachieving a bit.
Right.
But what stood out to me is with all these numbers, here's where, you know, like, and obviously we know he's not going to go to this pace, but he could still be good. But his ground ball rate's up to almost 41% compared to 34. What's crazy is his home run to fly ball is 28.6%. He usually sits in that 13 to 15% range. Right. So when that regresses down is when the decision gets made. Like, does he go all the way back to 15? Does he maybe just go to 20? Something along those lines. It's all health, like you said. It's all health. But I like seeing him on the top of this list, because I was looking at him going, okay, he's struggling a ton, but what's everything saying? And it's still saying he's actually been pretty good. So it's an interesting profile. And what I want to know is, like, when things started going badly for him the last like week or so, I guess. Oh, they fixed it. Okay, because they started playing him at second base. That's when he started slumping. He's back to DH in the last four games. So
it's Jorge, like, go think, back.
Yeah, I think they really, and he went deep yesterday. So I think they realized, like, let's just let this old man not run around the infield for nine innings and just let him hit like five times.
That is a good point, though. Like, maybe, I mean, the DH thing is a reason to expect or at least hope that Jorge Polanco can stay healthy for a full season if they do not want to play him at second base, which makes a ton of sense. What a windfall, too, by the way, whoever drafted. Like, I don't think anyone was high on Jorge Polanco entering the season. Like, speaking for me personally, as a fan of the Mariners, I was like, Jorge Polanco, really? This is your big signing that you're bringing in this year? And
I remember when they signed him, they were supposed to play third base, not even play second.
Yeah, and everyone's like, right. Yeah. So you just never know. But yeah, hell of a windfall for anyone who drafted Polanco or even picked him up off waivers. I don't even know if he was drafted.
To be fair, looking at this board, most of these guys came late in drafts, which is pretty impressive when we go through here. Because I want to hit on the entering Tuesday as the third most home runs in all of baseball.
Dude.
Just behind Aaron Judge and Kyle Schwarber. And that man is Trent Grisham. Yes, I did not stutter. It is Trent Grisham, who last season hit .190 with 26 home runs. Not even just his projected stats. I just want to read what he's doing right now. He's currently hitting .296 with 12 home runs. Like, he's almost to what we saw. He's halfway to the home run total already. Hasn't stolen a bag, so that's understandable. But it's crazy. He's leading off. He's playing probably 80% of the games right now, which is pushing Jason Dominguez to the bench, which is annoying as all get up. Where are you at on this Trent Grisham? Because I'm waiting for the roller coaster to just come crashing off the tracks, but I don't know when it's going to happen.
Right. And this is another one, just like Polanco, like strikeouts way down, whiffs are down, barrels are way up. Like this has been skill supported as well. It's just, I think in general, and I give
28, by the way, though.
I know he's still
me. Like, that surprises me.
And even Polanco is like still only 31, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think we have, like, Polanco at least has had a 30 home run season in the past. I mean, Grisham is almost about to set his season high. He's never hit more than 17 in a season in the majors and hasn't hit above 200 since 2021. Like, we have a very long track record of Trent Grisham, and I don't know. I think this comes crashing down. I could be wrong, but I'm going to trust the basically 3 to 4 full seasons that we've seen from Trent Grisham, and it hasn't been great. So even though the skills do support it, I'm skeptical. I also, unlike Jorge Polanco, and I'll throw it back to you with who you'd rather have, but I think once Trent Grisham gets cold, I think there's very real risk the Yankees don't play him either.
Yeah, I take Polanco in a heartbeat. I know the injury risk is probably more so with Polanco, but Jason needs to play every day. I don't care. Like, this isn't supposed to be happening. So when Grisham regresses, like you said, there's a chance that role flips in a big way. But hey, ride it while you can. We've been saying that on Fab for a few weeks. He's not available anymore. But for a while, he was saying, you know, there's a guy we're going to talk about in a little bit. We said the same thing. He double-donged tonight and walked it off. So some of these guys that you just don't trust that haven't done it in a while, just you ride it out and see where it goes type situation.
Who would you rather have, Polanco or Trent Grisham rest of season?
I said Polanco.
Okay, oh, Polanco. You said Polanco.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Give me Polanco, even though there's the injury concerns, because I think Grisham gets replaced at some point in time, to say the least. Let's talk Jordan Beck. This is a guy that I had a ton of shares of in draft season. I still have some in DCs, obviously, but I dropped him everywhere. Then he got sent back to AAA, tried to pick him up, got a few shares back. He's hitting .264 in the year with 3 home runs. Last year we saw with Jordan Beck, .188, 10 home runs, which is good. But now he's on pace for .265 and 32. This seems weirdly enough more realistic to me. Yes, there's a lot of swing and miss in this profile, which is terrifying if you want to see consistent production. But there's just something about this kid that I kind of kept saying all offseason at his draft price, that why can't he be the next guy that makes something happen? I don't know. I'm optimistic, but we'll see what you have to say. You dig into stats more than me.
Yeah, probably to my detriment, given standings in some of the leagues we're in together. I'm not buying Jordan Beck, actually. I actually think So I don't like the plate skills at all. It's a, like you said, it's a ton of strikeouts. It's also a ton of whiffs. But for me too, with Jordan Beck, it's like the who was your guy last year, Luis Matos, who just went off for like 3 days.
That was my guy. I always said take Elliot Ramos over Matos when everyone was picking up Matos.
I just call him your guy because he's on the Giants. But Luis like Matos, saying, like Jordan Beck has 6 home runs. I think he had 5 of them in like 2 days.
He did. And that is correct.
I mean, has had one outside of that. You look at like some rolling graphs for Jordan Beck on FanGraphs. It's like this massive like peak. It's like a Mount Massey type of summit, and then a very steep fall, even in his last like 15 games. So I don't know. I think like a crazy good weekend for Jordan Beck is making the year to date surface stats look good, but I just don't buy the plate skills. So. That being said, as Jung Ho Lee Dong
on Asian Heritage Night, dude, let's go.
Yeah, they're going crazy. I don't think Jordan Beck, like, I would have been wrong. This, like, I could have said this exact same thing about like Brenton Doyle last year, power speed on the same team. Power speed, you argued, I don't love the plate skills.
Doyle, you argued with me a lot on Doyle last year.
I know, and I was dead wrong. So fully aware I could be wrong with Jordan Beck here. I just don't think the plate approach is there yet for him to sustain this.
And I agree. That's why I pointed out the strikeout rate, because I knew you were going to go there, and you're not wrong in that respect, because it is terrifying. But again, yes, Doyle did have that last year. What I like about Beck is, you know, you pointed it out with the first few guys, but we're seeing a guy that's his barrel rate has increased quite a bit this season to 18.8%, which I think is definitely worth noting. 45% hard hit rate. The biggest thing is, like we talked about, Grisham potentially losing playing time. Polanco's got the injury concerns. Anybody can get injured. I get that. But we've got a 24-year-old in Jordan Beck who it's the Rockies, so I'll clarify that first. But in theory, there should be no one taking his playing time. Like, it should be his.
Yeah.
Since May 1st, he's hit in every game except the last one. So he had like 11 game hitting streak get snapped, 281, one homer over that stretch, 23% K rate over that stretch. So the strikeout rate improved over in the month of May. Like, it's baby steps. This is the thing we disagree on a lot, is we're with young players. I usually need to see it, but I'll see certain guys and I move on. You still need to see it type profile. Where I think if he gets run, like a second half could be huge for Jordan Beck as he gets more comfortable in his situation. So I don't fully disagree on it. And I like the board, because 32 home runs, at least, like, I think he realistically can get you like 25, 26, where these other guys, you know, projected for 61 and 53, we all know that's not happening. Where 32 for Beck probably doesn't happen, but I think he gets closer to that than we think.
Disagree. Yeah.
That's fine. We'll probably get a beer bet somewhere in the rest of the night here. I want to get your thoughts on Kyle Stowers, because this is the dude that absolutely massing, got a little cold last week, went deep again on Tuesday. So he is back and ready to roll. Just you know, the people that traded Trevor Rogers, remember that one someday?
Yeah. This. And Norby, so Norby and Stowers.
Both went deep today. Yes, they're both doing things. But we're talking Kyle Stowers hit 208 last year with 9 home runs. It was an ugly first run with the Fish. So far, he's projected to go 288 with 27 this season. And I think that 27 is very realistic, Ryan. So where are you at on the Kyle Stowers train?
So the 27, it's not his, just to clarify, it's not his projection. That's his pace. So sorry, if you take his current year pace. Yeah. And I just want to make sure people don't see that. I almost think like, almost what I said about Beck, I could replace with Stowers. Like, it's actually even worse swinging strike. It's just as bad, if not worse, plate skills. And Kyle Stowers doesn't run. The power looks awesome though. And maybe this is a flaw in my game. I need to accept, especially young players who have like a 30% strikeout rate. Like, that probably shouldn't be a deal breaker if you have really good other tools. So I would buy, if I have to buy like a pace that Kyle Stowers is going to hold, I could see him going 27 home runs, which is his current pace. No way in hell is Kyle Stowers touching 288 the rest of the way. I mean, the projection systems have Stowers at still like 230, 240.
230-ish, yeah.
So I think that's a little bit more realistic of a bet. And I don't know how much you're going to get on the base pass, where like with Beck, you you could. You could get something. So with Stowers, you're not going to, it's pretty much all power for Stowers.
Yep. No, I'm with you. It's well played on that one, by the way. Powers for Stowers. He's got that going. But yes, I think there's a lot to like there. Having Jesus Sanchez and company could maybe Dane Meyers someday after I release him because he got hurt. Comes back.
That was tough, wasn't it?
That was devastating. Devastating. Tried to enjoy a Sunday. Saw a minor back injury. Wasn't too concerned.
I think I fabbed Dane Meyers on a couple teams.
Yeah, so did I.
Didn't see it in time.
Like I said on the show with Ben, he was picked up in like 80% of leagues, so it wasn't just like a few guys missed the news situation. But it was a thing, to say the least. All right, we'll go on down the list here a little more. Let's talk Ben. Oh, I guess we'll talk Jacob Wilson. Everyone was talking about him in the chat, so we might as well bring up Mr. Jacob Wilson, who continues to make you and I look like complete idiots, which is really not that hard to do. Like, it's pretty cool. At least I'll speak for myself. Pretty easy to make me look foolish. But Jacob Wilson double-donged on Tuesday night, giving him 5 home runs on the season while he hits .363. Now, to be fair, Ryan, we both said he'd hit really well. Didn't think there'd be any power involved in this one. Again, 5 homers already. If you look at the 600 plate appearance, if he plays it out like you're saying, we got a guy hitting .348, which is just slightly lower where he's at right now, with 11 homers. It'll be 6 more on the season. I think we might have to readjust that stance right about now.
Yeah, the double dong with Jacob Wilson. So it's probably more of like a, 20 home run pace he's on right now, which is, yeah, I'm eating my words. I think he can hit. Like, do you think he could be better than what we thought Luis Arraez was? I think that's the question. And I mean, he's already well on his way, Jacob Wilson, with 5 home runs and 2 steals. There has at least been some hard contact. Like, there's been 3 barrels entering tonight. I don't know if either of Jacob Wilson's 2 home runs tonight were barrels, but let's just say one of them was. That's 4 barrels. That's actually like a modicum of hard contact to go with an elite plate approach. So, like, I don't know. Is he hitting near the top of the lineup?
He's been leading off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which matters a lot.
Sent down. Yeah. Butler got sent down. Wilson's leading off at least half a week now.
That's right. So, if you have a leadoff guy hitting .300, you're going to get a ton of runs in that park with that supporting cast. And maybe if you pop 10, 15 home runs on the season with like 5 steals, that is actually insanely valuable, and it's not a Luis Arraez type of thing. So maybe I shut down Jacob Wilson a little too much saying he was zero power, but we'll see.
You and I both, because I have 0 shares. So this is a frustrating one. I think, you know, there is going to be a slump at some point. It's just going to be natural throughout a season. It just depends. Does he slap his way back into it, or does he keep trying to hit with power to keep it going? That's what I'm curious to see. Regardless, like, average, he's going to be fine. But the power, it's crazy to see. Especially, like you said, that ballpark will help as well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Ben Rice, a guy that I think we knew the batting average would always be suspect, but the power has been really strong this season. Not striking out a ton. Playing time is not as great as I would like. It's like 2 games on, 1 game off, 2 games on, like, he's getting catcher treatment, even though he's DHing, which is frustrating, I guess, to what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah,
they're still saying he can hit .256 this year with 36 home runs. It just feels like he's a slump away from when Stanton comes back, if he comes back, whatever that is. That Rice needs to keep playing well, otherwise he will be replaced type situation.
It's great. I didn't realize he wasn't playing every day. Yeah. Like, the guy has a .360 OBP with 9 home runs. Yeah.
He was for a while, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Trent's hitting. Jason needs to play once in a while. Like, they say, like, all of a sudden Rice came into the let's sit a day here, a day there mix.
But that kind of goes back to what we're saying about Grisham. Is once we start to see a fall there, like, it's just kind of cutthroat with playing time. So Ben Rice looks really good. The skills look very good. It's raw power that is Beck and Stowers like, but it's also a better park
plate discipline
and better plate discipline. So I think of those like 3 so far, the power bats that we've talked about kind of out of nowhere. Ben Rice is my favorite to stick. I would like to see him play every day. Probably not going to play against lefties no matter what. So that is a bit of a drawback compared to like a Becker Stowers, who I think will play no matter what.
Yep, I'm with you as well. So would you rather have Ben Rice or Trent Grisham?
I would rather have Ben Rice, but you can sense the hesitation in my voice.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You said you'd have Rice over Stowers, I believe so.
Yes, and Beck.
Interesting. Well, Beck, I knew you'd pick that for sure. All right, let's get to the man, the myth, the legend, El Mago. He is back. He is at it. Javi Baez, my God, double donged on Tuesday. One being a walk-off. Six ribbies. He now has 5 home runs over like his last 12 games. He's hitting around 370 over that stretch. He has 22 RBIs over that stretch. And he's only striking out like 23% of the time, which is the most impressive part of this whole renaissance of Javi Baez. I think everyone's waiting for the other shoe to drop, Ryan. But honestly, if you look under the hood right now, he's producing as a guy should be with the skills he's showcasing at this point in time. Now, I have to preface that.
I don't know, man.
We haven't seen it. Okay, well, then what? Tell me where I'm wrong. Because,
dude,
the strikeout rate has dropped so much. And that's like the biggest thing.
Same as it was last year. Yeah. Same as it was, like, pretty much its baseline is 23-25%. It's basically a 400 BABIP for Javi Baez. Like, that is unbelievable.
It's not sustainable.
It's a hard hit percentage, 20%. 20%. That is terrible.
34%, 35%.
Well, probably added. Are we even looking at the same guy? Because we're just disagreeing.
I'm on Javi Baez's Facebook or his Fangraphs page. I want his Fangraphs.
Well, let me tell you, you might not want to look. Do you have any Instagram stories? I mean, we follow Rengifo and Willie Castro.
I might have to start following them here pretty soon. But entering Tuesday night, almost 6% barrel rate, 35% hard hit rate.
It's weird. Fangraphs has a hard hit of 20%, and the Statcast is 35. So I don't know. We're too much in the weeds. I'm too much in the weeds with this. But I don't know. I don't see, like, no. This is not. Like, I don't think Javi, but I don't think this is real. I don't. Tell me one skill that has changed from Javier Baez this season compared to the last three seasons.
His O swing has dropped 4%, which is
It's the same strikeout rate. It's the same barrel rate. It's the same. It's a 52% ground ball rate. Like, nah, dude, get out of here with that. Get out of here.
Contact rates are swinging, strike rates down 1.5%.
All right. So, rest of season projection for Javi Baez. let's just look at on Fangraphs. So, like, over 375 plate appearances, the bat has, like, basically all of them have like 10 home runs, 235 batting average, rest of season for Javi Baez. 235 batting average, 10 home runs. Are you taking the over on both of those?
Yes. Yes, I am. Would you like a beer bet on this, Ryan? Because I can sense this coming.
I'm not. Yeah. I would buy the projection. I think the projection's good. I would not. Like, I think that's reasonable. I'm not confident it would be the over. I just don't see much that has changed with Baez.
Well, I can't wait to throw this one in the chat when it comes to him and Mason Wynn now. This is going to be good. Good. Because Javi Baez, time again. Ryan O'Hearn.
Let's see, Michael C's in my corner here. Javi, 6% barrel, but blah, blah. I don't get it. Maybe he's got a good Facebook page, but I don't know if he's that good at baseball. It's been a hell of a heater, though, I will say. It has been cool to actually see Javi Baez. Because he has, like, even though he signed a big contract or whatever, like, that's got to be freaking rough for Javi Baez to be, like, so good, so young in his career, and then just go to hell. So I do like to see it. I'm just obviously very skeptical.
Yep. Yes, I've noticed that to be the truth. Ryan O'Hearn. Let's talk. Good God.
Naylor dong.
Josh Naylor off of Givens. He givens and he taketh. Ryan O'Hearn swinging it well. Mentioned it a couple fab shows ago, Ryan, that O'Hearn's playing so well. He's playing versus left-handed pitching as well. They're keeping him in the lineup. They're keeping him in the middle of the lineup. And right now we're looking at a guy that is hitting around 303 and on pace for 37 home runs this season after 18 last year. I don't know if the power can sustain that long. I still think he's going to have a pretty good season from what we're seeing so far. I'm not going to argue with that one bit. I'm on board. I've added him at a 12 like 3 weeks ago. I've been on this train. But where are you at on Ryan O'Hearn? Because it is a market improvement, and then I'll have a second follow-up question after you talk to Ryan O'Hearn.
I don't – I mean, so the question, like, for fantasy is he any more than a streamer? And I know O'Hearn has been playing against lefties, but I think it's basically just – Keep the outlook for me is the same. It's right-handed heavy weeks. You can roll with O'Hearn. It's lefty heavy weeks again. Even if he's playing, I don't know how effective he'll be against lefties. He was sat for obvious reasons last year against lefties. Pretty much been a platoon bat his entire career. So I just think O'Hearn's a streamer. Good power, decent batting average. That works in weeks where you get five plus right-handed starting pitchers.
My question for you then, because the way he's playing so well, Ryan Mountcastle seems to be almost the way of the dodo. Are you holding on to Ryan Mountcastle if you have him? I know we talked about him on a blue board a couple weeks ago as the skills look pretty good, but playing time is not there.
Right. And so once the playing time goes, unless they're really good, it's hard to hold. That said, I do think Ryan Mountcastle has been underperforming. He will rebound if he gets a chance to do it. But once playing time starts to go and you're kind of just a mid player anyway, I think you got to drop.
All right. I'm going to drop all the way to the bottom of this list. Talk about one of the most popular names in baseball right now. And Pete Crow Armstrong going deep again on Tuesday night, giving him 11 home runs on the season. Right now, PCA, he's on pace for 34 home runs with a 259 batting average. We know he runs wild. He's already got 13 steals this season. So we're talking about a guy that even rest of season projections, they have him going 15 and 29 basically, which is pretty darn impressive. Where do you sit on PCA, who is literally the talk of the town every single evening, it seems like?
Yeah, we were both off of Pete Crow Armstrong, yep. So I would confidently say we should both eat Crow Armstrong, and that just has not been a good call for us this season. But excellent call for folks who like PCA. He was polarizing. There was like a late. I was trying to pull up how many home runs he hit in like September last year. It was seven across August and September. So there was like a late power surge with, I think, some folks saying swing change and that sort of thing. Obviously has carried over to the season. I mean, it looks incredible. PCA, like he's barreling double what he did last year while holding a good strikeout rate. He's running like crazy. He's basically running one out of two times that he's on first base. It's a 50% stolen base attempt rate. He's successful at it, non-fantasy wise, but he plays elite defense. Like, this is pretty much an MVP caliber start to the season right now for PCA. And however old he is, whatever, he's young. It's very exciting to see. Fun dude to watch.
Very fun dude to watch. Looks like he's 12, but obviously much better than that. So we'll see how it keeps panning out, but very, very cool profile.
Your guy's on the mound. Devin Williams.
Oh no.
In extras against the Mariners. So we'll see.
Lovely. All right. Let's head to the fallers side of the board here, Ryan. And I want to get your unbiased opinion on Willy Adames, who last year had that big year, stole all the bases. That was probably the biggest talking point. Just can he steal bases again? And then goes to the Giants. And everyone's like, oh, the power is going to disappear. Well, he's on pace for 218 average and 13 homers after 251 and 28 last year. Hit a homer on Tuesday night. Almost went Oppo Taco in the ninth also. So almost double-donged on Tuesday. I have my thoughts I've made very clear on Willy Adames. Where are you at on Willy Adames?
I think it's just a slow start, which can happen, right? Big contract, new town, whatever. The fact that Willy Adames is having a pretty good May is a great sign that he's starting to overcome that a little bit and that it won't, you know, kind of linger all season. So I just think this is a slow start for Willy Adames. I'm not really concerned at all. All the plate discipline, the power metrics and whatnot are pretty much in line with what we saw in Milwaukee for Willy Adames. The question I had, right, and you alluded to this too, is he going to run? Book's still out, right? He's got four stolen base attempts on the season, only been successful on two. but he's at least running sometimes. So, like, I think Willy Adames can get to 10 steals. We're not going to see the 21 that we saw last year, it looks like. But I think he can get to 10 steals, hit 20, 25 homers with a, like, 230, 240 batting average, which is kind of, I think, what you paid for with Willy Adames.
Yeah, no, I think he should be just fine. You mentioned the month of May. After tonight's game, we got four home runs in the month of May, hitting close to 250. Like, feed us this kind of a pace every month, you're going to be sitting real pretty when things are all said and done. And it'll just be the steals, which we kind of warned everybody about to begin with. So, like you said, you got what you paid for, essentially. This is where it's tricky. Like, Luis from Gifle, I don't really want to talk about. It is, unless you really
you don't want to talk about the mascot.
It's bad. Looks like he has a bad attitude out there. He's getting benched for not hustling. Like, there's just a lot. Doesn't know how many outs there are.
Forgot how many outs. Yeah, it's actually a tough scene. This red board. There's some Bubba in the Bloom. Yeah. There's the mascot. There's Mount Massey. There's Bubba Burger.
Burger.
Tough scene for some of our favorites.
Burger had a monster week in AAA, which doesn't ring an endorsement, but he's back. He's got at least a hit in like both games, so it's a start. Let's look at Salvi. Salvador Perez hit 271 last year with 25 home runs. Right now he's on pace for 232-7. Like, massive drop off for Salvi Perez, Ryan. I think we all, like, every year we're all, okay, eventually Father Time's going to catch up. Father Time's going to catch up. He's already been banged up with an injury. He's 35 years old, which is just crazy to try to keep pumping it out. But it feels like between injuries and Father Time, things are slowly coming to an end. But, skills are still pretty good, so it's a tough one to break down. Where are you at on Salvi?
Yeah, I was gonna say I disagree. I think Salvi's gonna be just fine. The number I will point you to is 18. That is 18 barrels so far for Salvador Perez. He's making a ton of hard contact, two home runs. That's a crazy, I will say, unlucky thing to have. 18 barrels, he had only two home runs. That is wild. I think Salvador Perez is actually just fine. Like, I do agree at some point Father Time is going to get there. I just think, like, from an actual ability to make contact and make hard contact, this is the same Salvador Perez, if not better than what we've seen over the last couple of seasons. So I'm not worried at all. It just sucks that you've already missed out on like 6 weeks of pretty good skills and you pretty much have nothing to show for it. Like, that does hurt, but I think you just wait it out.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So his barrel rate right now be the second best of his career. Like, he's doing things as you threw out through Kevin Hastings and a ton of doubles. That's why I was pulling up his month of May. It's from DFS. I know, like, he's producing, but not jumping off the page even there. In the month of May, he's hit safely in all but two games, which is pretty good. And to Kevin's point, one, two, three, at least three doubles over that stretch, but still no home runs. That's the bugaboo with Salvi, but definitely an interesting one to see on the list here. Tristan Casas, we don't have to talk about because he gone. Let's get to the Anthony Santander, who it felt like was starting to come to life there after a very slow start. Then he's back on life support at this point in time. He's on pace for 196 and 19 homers. When you draft Santander, you're not drafting for a great average, but you're drafting for a ton of power. And right now you're not getting any, and he's dealing with back issues. Like, this has me slightly concerned.
Yeah, that has me very concerned, actually. The back issues with a drop in or a rise in ground ball rate and, like, not much hard contact at all. Like, those three things together, I'm actually pretty worried about Santander. This type of drop off in power is like the type where I would speculate on a hidden injury. And then when we do have kind of the back issues that he's had to layer on top of that, I just wonder how much that is affecting him. And then at some point, unlike Willy Adames, who's been able to turn things around in May, at what point, Santander, are you trying to play through it? Are you now just stressing or not stressing, just kind of pressing to prove your worth in Toronto? And it's not good, and I'm very concerned.
Yeah, very, very concerned. I have a couple DC shares. Don't think I have any redraft shares, but yes, the concern is real on that one. I want to ask you about Carlos Correa. I know it's a boring name, but it's still a guy that we know doesn't steal bags, but when you draft them at an affordable ADP these days, you're like, okay, I'm gonna get like a 260 guy with 20 to 25 home runs and 80 RBIs. Like, that's kind of what you're a safe middle infield stat line, which is kind of where his ADP was dictating. That is not taking place this year, Ryan. He's definitely not producing in that department. He's on pace for 231 and 8 home runs. Right now he has 2 home runs, and if you look at his quality of contact metrics, they are all down. He's hitting the ball on the ground a ton more. Anything on Carlos Correa?
You covered it pretty well, and I think the thing you didn't mention is, like, you're always kind of living on borrowed time with Carlos Correa. Like, when is that injury going to hit? And while he's healthy, he needs to produce, because we don't think we're going to get a full season out of Carlos Correa. So, yeah, very concerned for all the reasons that you mentioned. The hard contact is pretty much gone bye-bye, even though he is at least hitting the ball. But it's all pretty mellow, pretty soft contact. And we all know we're not getting any steals with Carlos Correa at all. So that makes it even worse.
Yep, nothing. Not a goose egg. It's like Michael Conforto. Some excitement in draft season by myself and others. Yep. When the Dodgers signed him, going, okay, this is a great lineup to be in. We saw market improvements last year with the Giants. That's why one of the reasons he's on this list. We saw a dude last year that hit 237, but the 25 bombs. You put him in that new ballpark, new lineup. We were all speculating on big boy things. That has not taken place. Conforto is on pace for a 153 average and 9 home runs. Did hit 3 doubles on Tuesday, so maybe things are changing. We'll see. He's benched everywhere for me, but barrel rates down, hard hits kind of the same as before. Where are you at in Conforto? Because there are some definite signs that show, like, yeah, he should not be hitting very well, but it's still not like completely broken, I think.
I'm surprised the Dodgers are still playing him every day. Like, that to me is pretty bonkers.
They keep winning, so it's like, let's see if we can figure it out, I guess.
I guess.
They keep playing. We're talking about the next guy, too. They keep playing also.
Who the hell's the next guy? Oh, Muncy. Yeah, why they keep playing him?
Jeez. He's even worse.
Yeah. No, Conforto, like, it's tough, because I thought another year removed from his shoulder stuff with him, right?
Yeah, when shoulder stuff, yeah.
Pretty much all of 2020. We saw a little bit of that power rebound last year, and that's why we were both kind of in on Michael Conforto, who's like, he's like 35-36, but no, still only 32 years old. Like, I thought this could come back and look good. I have been totally wrong on that, and I don't see much of, like, this looks like the 2023 version of Conforto, so I don't know, which wasn't good, which is what you don't want to see. So I don't know if something bad's going on with the body. I also don't like to go back to the playing time. If I'm so surprised that the Dodgers have played him this much, I'm also wondering, can they continue to do this? Like, as the pitching staff crumbles, as maybe they start to have some kind of chinks in the armor, can they really afford to play Conforto? Like, they're paying him, but, like, I don't think the Dodgers care.
They don't care about that one bit. Honestly, if Outman were to start hitting the ball, and when Edmund returns, sure, like, that's when they start making decisions. It's like, if a young kid starts to prove himself, that's when things can be like, or if they decide, hey, we're going to let Kim keep playing second base, we're going to slide Páez over to left field, and Edmund's going to come play center field, and, well, sorry, Conforto, you're on the bench now. That's for scenarios. We'll see how that plays out. Sticking in LA, I want to get your probably quick thoughts on Max Muncy. Dude's hitting one. He's on pace for 190 and 4 home runs. He has 1 home run on the season. One whopping home run so far this season for Max Muncy. I've been preaching this for a couple seasons now. Like, if you look under the hood, it's not pretty. And he was at least, you know, barreling the ball up a lot. And that's the power saved him from a pretty horrific stat line in general. The power ain't saving him right now, Ryan.
No, and if the power is not saving Max Muncy, you have absolutely nothing left to fall back on. So, yeah, like, hitting 190, ton of strikeouts, that's not going to change. 1 home run to 7 barrels. So, like, still, even though that's, like, a little bit fluky, so maybe Max Muncy should have 2 or 3 home runs. Like, shit. The hard contact's just not there. You tack on that fact he's 35. Like, who are you more worried about, Muncy or Conforto?
Oh, Muncy, easily.
Same.
For me.
Yeah, same.
He's got injury, but he's supposed to have, like, TJ surgery a couple years. Like, he's on borrowed time right now with this whole scenario. So, yeah, no, Muncy for sure. I want to ask you about Yordan Alvarez. Supposed to return on Thursday or Friday from his hand injury. It's just muscle muscle under his or above his bone, below his skin, on the top of his hand. Weird scenario how that took place. But he's supposed to be coming back. He's got 3 homers on the year. Yordan is on pace for 15 home runs and a 210 average, which should both be way below what you took a late first, early second round pick for. When you look at his profile, the quality of contact is still very good. If you weren't naming Yordan Alvarez, it's down for his standards. Where are you at on this guy? Because injuries are always a concern. If it's a hand, it's a back, it's a knee. But usually he still powers through it enough to be quite successful.
And that was like the catch 22 with drafting Yordan, at least for me. It's like, I don't like taking a guy gets injured this often, but like, it's never really affected Yordan Alvarez until this season, of course, yep. when I take him. I'm not worried about Yordan Alvarez. Like, yes, it sucks. We've gotten pretty much nothing from him for 6 weeks, but I think we give Yordan the benefit of the doubt. He has been able to do this for years. He's still very young, unless the injury is just like a lot worse than we think. And it could be. This is the Astros we are talking about, but I wouldn't be surprised if Yordan comes back with this, from this hand thing. He's healthy and he just goes nuts. I feel like this is a guy who could just go crazy over the summer, and we're sitting back kind of laughing at what we see right now. So I'm not worried about Yordan Alvarez. He's an elite hitter. Elite hitters are going to hit at some point.
Yeah. Don't disagree there. As long as he's healthy and in the lineup, he will be crushing baseballs. Anybody else on either of these lists you want to discuss? Like, I just peeked at Jock Peterson's underlying metrics, and it's actually saying he should be a lot better than he is, but given can't be much worse. Anybody else you want to take a peek at or discuss before we do some listener questions?
Don't think so. We cruise by two elites, which for good reason, like Freddie Freeman and Corbin Carroll.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue those ones, basically.
Yeah, like there's not much to say there. Other than, and you shared this in the Discord today, that Freddie Freeman article in The Athletic was bonkers. The amount of work he's going, treatment Freddie Freeman's going through just to stay on the field, 90 minutes every day before the game, and then he treatment after. Yeah. And he's this good. I don't know if I feel good about reading that article. Yeah.
It's like, but it feels like you're playing on borrowed time right now.
It does. Like, I'm like, holy crap. But later on in the article, it did say like they expect, despite all this, they expect Freddie Freeman in the second half. And they kind of said this at the beginning, they expect to not have to have as much of this treatment in the second half.
If he's on it and continuing to put pressure on it, how does it get better? That's where I'm confused.
I don't know, but like, that's what the article said. So
it's a weird situation.
It's crazy, but dude, a .376 batting average at 43 home run pace. That's with an IL stint and several missed games. It's unbelievable what Freddie Freeman's doing right now. So I just wanted to call that one out there.
Yeah, no, I gave you a shout the night before when I was doing stuff for breakfast with Bubba, and I just like, hey, let's look at his stat line going Bloomfield. Like, this dude's crushing things yet.
Yeah. I was so worried, so worried entering the season.
I still would be a little bit, but enjoy everything you get, right? Like, that's one of those, if you roster Freddie Freeman right now and you see a half-decent first baseman pop up on the waiver wire, you might want to add him to your bench. Just throwing that out there, because at any moment I could see like even a phantom IL stint to come along, like, hey, let him rest. He's 85% right now, let's let him rest type thing. Like, he just feels that might come at some point this year.
I've got a really bad, like, morbid comparison, but I'm gonna make it anyway. I think I can make it because I did have to put down my aging dog.
Okay. I thought, where are you going with this?
I did have to put down my aging dog a few weeks ago, and like leading up to it, I knew it was coming, and I was like, I'm just gonna enjoy this.
Yes.
Kind of the same with Freddie Freeman. We're not putting Freddie Freeman down, people, but I feel like there's an injury coming. So I'm enjoying this time with Freddie while I can.
While you have it. Honestly, for someone that's lost a dog a couple years ago, that's a good comparison, actually. It's a pretty good
kind of weird. Kind of weird, right? But hey, whatever. Hey,
it's late on a Tuesday. So
yeah,
that works for it. And you mentioned Corbin Carroll. He went deep again tonight. The dude's just a freak. He's not stealing. That's the part that's crazy. But like, on pace for 40 homers, he's legit playing like he should hit 40 homers right now. he's in AT&T or Oracle Park now, whatever the hell they're calling it today. Last night on Monday night, hits 2 homers, 1 to straightaway center, 1 to left center. On Tuesday, it's another 1 to left center. He's not even pulling the ball. He's going oppo in one of the toughest ballparks to do it in. So
And three of his five steals, Corbin Carroll's five steals were in one game, I think.
One game.
Yep. So, I don't know. It's bizarre. Yep.
Crazy stuff indeed. All right, let's hit up some listener questions coming from the Discord here. Let me navigate the minefields to get to this one. Show questions. Found it. Huh. We're going to start with Mailman Mike on this one. Who's most at risk to go from green to red, and who is most likely to improve from red to green? So who's your most likely to go from green to red?
I will say, so from green to red for the podcast crowd would be who's a riser that will be a fader going forward. I will say Trent Grisham or Jordan Beck. We'll go twofer.
I will go with Trent Grisham as well. I am not going to say – and Wilmer Flores, we didn't even talk about him, but dude, that's yeah. I didn't talk about him for a reason, but when it comes to that question, I'm going to throw him out there.
I didn't even see him on the list. Yeah, there he is. Jesus.
Yeah, he's definitely going that direction. So then who's most likely to improve from red to green? Jordan?
I will say – I'll say Jordan, but that's easy. I will say Salvador Perez because the skills are there. And I will say Jake Berger because he's actually done it each of the last two seasons, this exact thing. So
Berger was my number one pick because I'm still a believer. I have to be. But I still like he's done it in the second half every year. He showcased. I know it's AAA pitching. I get it. It's not the bigs, but he destroyed that. So he definitely should not be down there. You got to let the kid play through it and figure it out. He has had his baby have heart surgery, for Christ's sake. Like, he's probably not all there if you really want to think about it.
Yeah, good point. I forgot about that.
That happened late in spring training. Like, plus it's a new home. And like, I grain of salt a lot of things when it comes to Jake Berger right about now. And let the kid figure it out. And he is a kid still to me, at least, so let him figure it out. The other guy I would mention is Willy Adames, not being a homer, but I keep pounding on that drum. We've had a lot of questions in the Discord directed at me on that one, and I'm going to stay strong, and he's waking up in May, so just be patient, folks. BP says, I have no players in red, so that's good. I do have Jordan Beck in an NL only cheap, too. He should play every day for the stink bomb Rockies. That's a good one way to put it. What's your outlook for him rest of the season? Thanks. Ryan, do you want to give him your prognosis or my prognosis?
I think honestly, even with my prognosis, a cheap Jordan Beck in an NL only league is a nice asset to have. So I will I'll give BP the benefit of the doubt on that one. But yes, I'll stop railing on Jordan Beck, who has only homered in 3 days of the MLB season.
Three more days than me. I still think, like, even if you do as the bat gives him 11 more homers, 5 more steals, hits 250. Like, in NL only, you take that and run with it. So he's close to a 2010 guy hitting 250. I think he's better than that, but even if that's your floor, it's pretty good. To be real, that's not bad. I think he's better than that, but that's not a bad floor, especially in an NL only format that you're doing. Yep. So. Pilster says, what Conforto playing this poorly, any chance Mookie goes back to the outfield, maybe help him? Yeah. And Mookie's the anti-Rafael Devers. That's funny. Maybe help him find this game too. Kim plays regularly at shortstop. Any other call-ups? Okay. I don't think Mookie moves. He could, but like we already mentioned Outman. They have other outfield options, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, I never really thought about that. And I don't know how good... Like, I hear things that Mookie's not that great of a shortstop. I mean, it's hard as hell to just go from being an outfielder to a shortstop. I guess he came up as a second baseman. But I it's an interesting idea, but I think Mookie's going to stay where he's at. And I do think Conforto is on very thin ice.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I think, well, thin ice, we'll see. But I agree, it's not pretty. Maybe a platoon situation coming his way, pretty strong platoon situation. Any other call-ups you see with the Dodgers? Not really at this point in time. Or they just write it out. Yeah. So we think he's on thin ice is the answer to that. Adam Brunson says that board tells me team hitting really is contagious and team lineup protection matters. Always exceptions. Him. Yep. I agree. I noticed that with a lot of your boards. I think we talk about it on certain shows. Didn't really highlight it today, but I know there'll be some shows where, hey, there's like four guys from one team on this side or something like that. Cause I say it a lot. Teams will streak together. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like with the Rangers all struggling except Langford type thing, and then you know other and teams just
whatever the Mariners are doing over the last month, like
they're all eating fried chicken from KFC and Jobu's in the third locker to the right, like they're all figuring something out. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
So definitely a contagious situation. Callan says, who on the Fowler side has given you the biggest concern this year?
I will go with, I'll say Santander with the injury, but I will also say the mascot. I'm worried about Luis Rengifo.
So am I. And there aren't that many options like knocking on the door per se, but there's some down the list that could like second half take it out if Rengifo doesn't get his stuff together. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So I am nervous about this one. This is not a good year for any of our mascots. Let's put it that way.
Only the off brand. My Calgary.
Yeah, the off brand is having the best one. And then GP Churchill says Conforto's hitting metrics are career worst. Perhaps the most telling number is a 10% pull flight ball rate.
Oh,
easy. That's a great pull. Literally easy drop. When a veteran goes this far off the deep end of relevance, do we continue to follow from a safe distance or casually ignore? What kinds of production numbers would rekindle your interest in a veteran whose metrics are this bad? A better hard hit rate, more pulled fly balls. What is a good indication of players riding their ship? Good question.
Yeah, no, good question. And I mean, we can read these wrong all the time. Like I thought Paul Goldschmidt was done last year. And Paul Goldschmidt, Old Schmidt, of course, we refer to him on the show as the second half for Paul Goldschmidt was very good. So it's not just automatically any guy in his mid-30s who starts struggling like Father Time, yada, yada. That's probably the case more than most. But I just need to see, I mean, to go back and answer Greg's question, I just need to see hard contact. I don't care too much about the pull. Like, yes, pull rates would be great. It's better to pull the ball than to not. I don't typically go that deep when I'm just scanning a player. I just want to see hard contact and fly balls. And basically I'm just looking at barrels for that and seeing how often that is happening. And Conforto's case, it's not. So until I start seeing that again, like I'm pretty down on the guy. And I mean, we've also said this, but once the playing time starts to go, then it's very dicey, which Conforto, it hasn't happened yet, but that's kind of the ultimate sign to drop.
Yep, I'm on the same page. We've talked about him a lot tonight. So a good breakdown from GP on that one. And yep. Yeah, pretty much echoes what we've been discussing. And it's going to take a lot for me to – I haven't dropped him many places yet, but maybe I should. I don't know. I guess that team context, and he's still playing every day, is what keeps me there. If he starts
like losing playing time. Like I do have – let's see. Yeah. I've got Conforto and labor. And I have not dropped him, but labor's
that's tough with IL spots.
It's unlimited IL. Like you can hold a lot of people for a lot of, and like whoever you pick up, you have to start that week. So like you don't make that many moves. So actually Conforto hasn't been that close to a drop for me. Like I still have Thomas Sejesi in that league. Jesus.
That's a drop, by the way, just throwing it out there.
I know, but like, I can't drop him because whoever I pick up, I got to start. So, you know, so I don't know.
That is a great point and a great place to probably wrap things up. Mr. Sejesi, thanks for coming to the party.
Yeah, let's end this with a rousing Thomas Sejesi shout out.
Talk about a guy that didn't make these boards, but maybe should have.
Let's go to his Facebook page.
I'm going to go to his MySpace right about now. because he's in the minor leagues.
He's young.
He's in the minor leagues. He doesn't count anymore. Any final thoughts as we wrap up the Bloom Board episode and get ready for a Week 9 Fab preview in a couple nights?
Yeah, I'll be down a tooth for the Fab preview. So going into the good doctor tomorrow morning,
the teeth doc.
Yeah, going into the good dentist in the morning, getting a molar pulled. So glad we don't have a show tomorrow, but I'll be back and ready to go for Thursday.
You missed the text about the live Patreon show at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, from the operating room,
straight from the Novocaine to the mic.
Just hold my phone up to my mouth.
Looks like he's like half paralysis on the side of his face, just
drooling. Hey, so Patreon perks, man. We want to see that, right?
We'll let you pay for it, folks. All the goodies on that stuff right there.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be too much. But we wish you the best. I know you'll be just fine. And I can't wait to see how things are looking on Thursday evening as we power through another week in Fab and have Ryan power through it literally with what's going on. And I told you I'll be in interesting shape that night too.
Right. You might be coming a little hot. So Thursday could be kind of a shit show.
So we'll see how that one goes, and just buckle up, everybody. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanVHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 242. Catch you all next time.